what I'm about to introduce. You know, there is a church here in San Francisco, and the press has said this about it. It helped keep open a medical clinic in San Francisco, which otherwise would have closed. It benefited research in the medical fields of cancer, heart disease, and sickle cell anemia. It has also supported educational broadcasting such as KQED and provided emergency cash to distressed families, particularly those of slain law enforcement officers. I could go on and on with the list of what it has done, but the name of this church is the People's Temple Christian Church. I don't know why Christian is there, but the minister will tell us about it very soon because I think it's sort of interdenominational. But the man behind this many-faceted church is the Reverend Jim Jones, and I'd like to welcome you to Reactions tonight.
Thank you very much.
And I'd also like to welcome Michael Probst, who is an associate minister of the same church, is also as modest as Reverend Jones. But tonight we're going to just throw that aside and let them actually tell us some of the things that they're going to do. And Reverend Jones, I'd like to begin with this. You're probably the only man in the world who could bring together in one room at the same time Eldridge Cleaver and Kathleen, Assemblyman Ray Brown, the John Birch Society, Lieutenant Governor Mervyn Dyerly, Mayor Mosley, the Police Chief Charles Gain, District Attorney Joseph Freitas. Most people would wonder, who did that? President Carter? God? But I found it wasn't him, it was you. How did you bring these entities together?
I really can't say. Other than I suppose that we have a common concern for justice with people, and of course Cleaver at the time, there was some question, a great deal of alienation because of his views, and People's Temple felt that a person should not be judged because of their views, and we did come to his legal defense. That was not to say that I supported his ideology, but that is probably some explanation. We supported John Bircher once, who was being discriminated against. John Bircher, who, contrary to all of the opinions I had been told about the Birch Society, was not a racist, and that I think that explains it. We don't have an arbitrary attitude of serving only people who agree with us, and that may explain some of it.
You happen to remind me of someone with whom I have lived for a number of years. When he taught at a predominantly black school, some of the students asked, why would you bring a member of the John Birch Society in to address your class? But he said that the only way you will grow is to be exposed to all ideologies. So I'm glad to know that that's existing here in San Francisco. Now, something else that you've done that I don't really understand. Your church is located in somewhat of a transient area in predominantly
Indeed.
The black district.
Indeed.
Many people have tried before you to bring the grassroots together, the so-called black bourgeoisie, the national, state, and local elected officials to begin to see that the struggle lies in really bringing together all these people instead of one predominantly ethnic group. Now, how have you been able to do this?
Again, one doesn't think about their successes, I gather. They're more concerned about the failures. We preach inclusiveness very strongly. We preach that, or we speak, and we state that it's very important that all people who have been, to some degree, left out of the process of economic success, that we get together, that we unite in a common struggle. And that's very important to us. We also are determined to see that there is a good attitude on the part of the majority members, the caucusoids who are in our attendance, that they have a proper attitude, understanding of the problems of the third world. But we don't compromise our principles in any way in concern for the struggle of the third world people. But we have a number of good white people that we jokingly say are very well field niggerized.
How about that? I love that expression. Well, how did you, what were you doing when the struggle was going on with, say, just the Asians or just the blacks or just the Chicanos? You were here in this area, but somehow you were low profile. Why are you just on surface?
We were not here as a center. You see, it's only been in the last 2 years that I have been located in San Francisco. I was serving in the northern part of California in an agricultural community, which was the biggest mistake of my life.
Why was it a mistake?
Well, there's not enough, there were not enough people representative of all groups, and an agricultural community is a little more sterile. I'm frankly a little bit afraid of what's happening in agricultural communities these days. Having a multiracial family, I noted a great deal of prejudice, not only anti-black feeling, but anti-Semitic feeling. And it's on the increase across America. And we need to get alarmed about it. All people who have ever suffered any kind of oppression or discrimination needs to reckon with this factor. After all, in the past few months, we've seen blacks run out of Taft. We've seen Indians mistreated terribly in different areas of even our own state. Blacks burned out of Siskiyou County. We had buses surrounded just because we had black drivers in Sonoma County. And fortunately, the court, a very good judge, for the first time, come up against this racist element. But they are there, very, very much there in the outlying areas of the big cities. And certainly our metropolitan areas are not free of racism.
Well, unlike the white popular thought that the church has been a leader in the black community, it has led, but I have questions about the nature of the leadership. But in your church, somehow you've brought together the militants, the agnostics, the atheists, the fundamentalists. How have you gotten all these people together?
In our worship style, we respect people based on what they produce, and that's, of course, consistent with Moses' teachings and Jesus' teaching. Judge a tree by the fruit it bears. So if an atheist does the works of all these great teachers through history of all the religions, and the fundamentalist does the work, lives the life, character, and concern, shows compassion, we find that we can get along very well. Because Jesus said, he is not against me, is on my part. When one of his disciples came up to him early in the ministry, when all the followers that Jesus had were with him, so it had to be someone of another faith, Islam or Hebrew teaching, or some other Zoroastrianism, who knows. But John said, what are we going to do with this gang? They're not with Jesus. He said, they're not against me, they're for me. And so I think we're doing what Jesus really, he was in a sense a great revolutionary. And I think we've neglected that aspect of Jesus' teaching. When he judged people in Matthew 25, the only judgment that ever came out of the mouth of the Nazarene was, I was hungry, you didn't feed me. I was thirsty, you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, you didn't take me in. I was in prison, oppressed, and you didn't do something to get me out of that condition. He said, well, when did we see you there? He said, in that you saw the least of suffering humanity there, you saw me. And so you didn't help them. Now depart from me. I never knew you.
Well, how is it that in your membership, first, what do you think is a failure of the black ministers, why they haven't been able to organize people to do the kinds of things you did? Because I understand that it was your church, but you have a lot of grassroots people there who were responsible, or partially responsible, for freeing the four reporters in Fresno.
That's true. I think particularly so there. We heard indirectly from a jurist that there was going to be adamancy on that issue. And then when we introduced at the peak a couple of thousand, with PAR, we had over 3,000, in Los Angeles. But one of the jurors said, I guess we're going to have to get the judge to do something about this to get all these niggers out of town. Mm-hmm. And that was, of course, a compliment to us. The press is the people, and we felt that very basic issue here, creeping again, even after Watergate, we're going to tell the press, and I know the press has behaved grossly irresponsible in many, many areas, neglects the problems of the third world, you see it every day. But when a press cannot keep its sources confidential, we're in trouble. We've never heard from Deep Throat at Watergate if there hadn't been that protection. And we've seen a couple of cases with Gil Cani and Roselli and what they knew evidently something about the conspiracy against Kennedy. Boom, the moment it was revealed publicly that they were bringing witnesses, both of them ended up dead, one shot in the neck in typically mafia fashion, the other floating out in the Bay of Biscayne near Florida in a barrel. So we found this was an important issue. Some people, I thought particularly they should understand that it meant nothing to us. We had no following in Fresno. It was just an issue of concern. I think some people thought we were courting the press, but when you do that sort of thing, you only bring the press's inquiry more into your activities. I've never seen so many reporters in my life since then going through you like, scrutinizing you very, very closely. And we were aware when we took that stand that it might be suspect, but we felt we waited for several days and no one seemed to take up the cudgels of this important issue. There was no one there marching.
Well, was this before the grant that you gave to these church, to the three newspapers?
No, we had done that in the Nixonian period, when it was really dangerous to support the press. C- across the nation, any newsman that came in difficulty with the system, excuse me, we immediately assisted. I think we assisted far to the point of $4,400. But we see religion should be a practical thing. We feel the highest worship to deity, however you see it, should be a service to your fellow man. And in reference to other churches, I think they're caught up in this futurism. And honestly, I don't see how they get it out of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ said, petition or pray that heaven come on earth. Heaven is within you. Do something with the problems of the here and now. But you hear this pie in the sky stuff and futurism about the furniture of heaven and temperature of hell. And that's where too many of our churches, you know, their heads are still there, even in 1977.
With that, let me say amen, because we're going to pause and come back in just a moment. That pie in the sky bit just used to kill me. If only someone had said, you know, like, it's here, and you decide what it's going to be. What did you say, that you don't tell them about the furnishings of heaven or the temperature of hell? I hope you heard that, Tex, Sarah, so you'll stop running after your kids. I hope you heard that comment, that he does not tell his followers about the furnishings of heaven or the temperature of hell, so that your kids can grow up healthy. See, out in that suburban community where he is, they're telling them that you must store your goods, because when you leave here, I'm glad that you're telling the people that it's here.
That's what I
want. They told me that they didn't know the time. And they are absolutely right. The former East director said, we didn't know the time when you were. But do you know that or not, another station, that when this is over, I'm out. When this is over.
Fine. I think I've traced down what was said, and I talked to a couple of people who agreed that he was responding to a question, and he was interviewed by Julia Hare.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And her question was that, you know, you, Jim, were not considered for membership in the Black Leadership Forum because you were not totally 100% Black. Are you determined to make it into this organization? And Jim evidently responded by saying, I don't want to go where I'm not wanted. Mm-hmm. He felt that it was a blunder on the part of the Black Leadership Forum to exclude him, because he said it plays right into the hands of the system, which is trying to keep, you know, Blacks and minorities divided in order to keep them oppressed. And he didn't feel there was a majority opposed to him, however, based on reports of discussions about him by forum members. And so I asked Jim today if he had said, you know, that, and he admitted that he did, you know, call it a blunder on part of the forum. But, you know, I gave him the background on this, and he was upset with me because, see, this, I called Doris in response to a meeting where he spoke at the Officers for Justice, and you know, he was received very well. In fact, they gave him a long ovation. He was approached afterward, and so I called Doris, and I thought that she had mentioned having a get together where, you know, Jim could possibly speak to some, you know, Black leaders. And at first, you know, this was at a previous conversation, I thought she had meant like an informal gathering. I didn't know that she had met the Black Leadership Forum, but I'd kind of left it up to her, you know, which would be best. And I did this on my own because I thought it would be good for, you know, them just to hear Jim and see where he's at, and alleviate any rumors or just get things straight. But he was kind of upset. He said, you know, don't push these people if they don't, you know, want me to come. He said, that's fine. He said, I just want to mainly alleviate the rumor that I'm politically motivated. I'm not going to run for any office, have no intentions to. And he says he feels that, you know, certain people are needed to stay on the outside and point
right.
to the heirs within. Mm-hmm. And so I told him I wouldn't push it any further. Mm-hmm. But that was, in essence, mm-hmm. what the situation was.
Oh, well, I don't know. You know how, like I told you, I didn't hear it.
Yeah.
I didn't hear, but I got, everybody got phone calls, you know. And no one, all they would say that he was on Julia Hare, on the same station Julia Hare was on. But, you know, no one ever said it was the interview, which it, you know, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just sorry that the thing got blown totally out of perspective.
Yeah.
Know.
Well,
that's too bad.
The reports I got was that it wasn't, you know, they didn't dwell on it. It was an hour interview or
mm-hmm.
so, and they didn't dwell on this aspect of it. Mm-hmm. It was just handled within like a, mm-hmm. you know, a minute or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just looking at my notes here. He said stupid blunder. That's
mm-hmm.
what I have. He did admit that
mm-hmm.
he thinks that's probably what he said, something like
mm-hmm.
that. So, but it's something that, you know, that's the rumor we kept getting, that people felt that he was trying to gain power to run for office or something.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we had been approached, you know, to run somebody for supervisor,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, we're not even going to do that. I mean, some people wanted, like, Johnny Brown or somebody,
mm-hmm.
you know, black to run,
mm-hmm.
but he's trying to. We're trying to alleviate this idea
the political stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Because we're going to stay out of all partisan politics whatsoever.
Yeah. It'll kill you.
But,
really?
Yeah.
I think Yvonne called me today, Yvonne Golden,
mm-hmm.
and she's been working very diligently within the Black Leadership Forum.
Oh.
You know, and I really think, Mike, I'll be very honest with you that, after the Roots, you know, people saw Roots and really felt uptight, you know.
Right.
They really did, you know.
Right.
And I think it was a lot of emotion that was involved, particularly when you had one black on one side supporting Jim, and then another on the other side who resented their support of him. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think a lot of those feelings will be eliminated. And people will see his good work, and that will be that, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let me assure you that, you know, we're here taking stands on issues,
mm-hmm.
and we'll always do that.
Mm-hmm.
We'll look at the issue, not
mm-hmm.
you know, who's backing it necessarily.
Right.
And, I mean, I think we could see the effectiveness, like, at that Board of Education meeting,
right.
where you and Yvonne were blasting them.
That's right.
And all they saw was two black women,
right.
you know, coming at them.
That's
and
right.
then. You know, when those white hands went up
that's
there to
right.
show support, I think, you know,
right.
we can work together that
that's
way.
That's right,
you
know? And that's what I'd hope that we could really do over this city, because it really makes a hell of a big difference.
Sure, and, you
and
know,
that exactly when you get one side fighting the other side, you can forget it.
Yeah.
It's called divide and conquer.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, our trouble has been to convince people of our motives. Ever since, you know, the Moscone election and so forth, they're trying to put us in this political bag,
yeah.
make us kingmakers
yeah.
in the community.
Yeah.
And
fear. They're afraid.
Yeah.
A lot of it has to be.
And threatened.
Right. That's right. A lot of it is fear, and they feel threatened. And of course, nothing we can do about that.
But,
you know, but like I said, I think there's a way, though, that I've learned that you can get around it. Is just moving on and doing the good things that you've been doing and keep doing it, you know.
Right.
And helping people, and that's, you know.
And Jim truly wants to unite and not divide. That's
mm-hmm.
why, you know, he said, you know, I told him that you thought, you know, he'd be able to speak in May. That, I mean, there was that possibility. And
mm-hmm.
he said, well, if there's opposition, though, he said, I don't want to cause more division than already exists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, no, I said, well, I'd talk with you further and see what you
mm-hmm.
thought, because...
Well, let me work it out, and he will be, as soon as we work it out, you see what's happening, you know. I will be happy to have you.
Okay.
And we'll send you an invitation. But I, too, do not want to see division. So I think I would be, you know, just the tone of the group, you know. so that I can do it. Okay?
Sure.
And that's a promise.
Okay.
Okay, now.
Thank you.
All right, now.
Take care.
Bye. All right, bye-bye.
Both here and abroad, as you may be familiar, we have 27,000 acres undertaking abroad in a mixed society, black president, but a beautifully racially inclusive society, and it's an agricultural project. Several of our members there, a couple hundred of our members, it serves many purposes. Not only does it help feed and clothe and house the people in an emerging third world nation and give jobs to, I think now we're employing 91 people, but we have run into individuals who are almost lost in the asphalt jungle. And so social service agencies or judges will say, you either take them, and if you've got a place abroad, fine, otherwise they're going to jail. And we've got 22 people now, young people, who were at the very lowest extremity. Some who were kleptomaniacs, they weren't members of the parish, but kleptomaniacs, I think of a child molester, all sorts of social deviations.
Incorrigible,
that's right, thank you. And when we put them in this new environment, I'm an environmental determinist, it's made me an environmental determinist more than anything.
Repeat that again, what is that, an environmental determinist?
Determinist, yes, I believe that if we will do something about the environments, they're talking about crime in the streets, you know. And I think a lot of the youngsters saw something done more about the crime in the suites, we would see a change in attitude. Opportunities are not there. Recreational opportunities, job opportunities. 50% of our black youth are unemployed. And work ethic's a very strong emphasis in America, and that's right, what should be. But what does this do to the morale of a person? I think behind every situation you see, there's much talk about crimes of violence today, and yet only 6% of the crimes in the United States are violent, and of that 6%, 90% of those crimes are happening to us, the poor white, the
yes,
poor black,
the
Indians. One case I was called into, I didn't know them, but called me the other day, the husband had stabbed the wife, and said he'd never been violent in his life. And when I got into the situation, she said, why don't you get a job? That was the worst thing she could have said to him, but an understandable thing. And this drinking, typical kind of thing. We've got a type of welfare system I think could stand much improvement. We give money to people instead of creating opportunities, jobs, and programs. But naturally, that fellow who has not been able to meet the standards of success in American society, which is to work and produce, he gets his money before he gets home to buy food for the family. He's going to be at the tavern quite frequently. And I think behind every bit of the crimes of violence that I've run into is a social condition. And I'm very much concerned about this talk. We're going to bring back capital punishment because I notice capital punishment doesn't work for the rich.
It's never, you're right. It's never a deterrent to crime either.
Neither. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. We find that, I think it's been pretty well supported, anyone with $50,000 of assets has never gone to a gas chamber or been hung or shot or electrocuted in this country. And we also find that there is a tendency today in the world towards dictatorships, be they right or left. And often execution later becomes a political tool to do away with dissenters. And yet you hear so many people rapping about, let's bring back capital punishment. And as you say, it is not a deterrent. In fact, there are a whole lot of people who are so miserable out there, they want to commit suicide like Gilmore, and yet they're a little fearful of doing it themselves, and I think we'll see more of this type of thing. They'll kill somebody or do something of a capital nature so that the state will take care of them.
And why are there more blacks and minorities in jails and prisons in comparison to their percentages in the population? Mm-hmm. To say that that it's not the environment, that it's not social conditions, is to say that they're inferior. I'm not ready to buy that. I think it's
I refuse to buy it. I'm happy to hear you say it.
And the fact that there's no jobs, that, as Reverend Jones said, there's over 50% unemployment for black, what are they going to do? They watch television. They see families with material goods living comfortably, material things that they can't have, so they try and get it. The only way they can is to turn to the streets.
And
they're already in the streets as a means of survival.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is what we're going to do. We're going to come back in just a moment because I know that any time there is a groundswell and people who are concerned with the social movement as you're a people's temple, there must be some kind of surveillance. And I noticed tonight you didn't come in here with a battery of bodyguards, so I want to know how you move freely with the FBI, the CIA, or whoever may be infiltrating your church. I'm sure they're sitting out there on camera. You know, this is the one that came.
He's my security.
You know, your security, how about that? This is the security.
21 assassination threats.
But I'm serious. The security.
He's security. That's where we are today.
He's usually huge, strong trooper types.
Well, he knows karate.
Don't underestimate.
You know, wow.
Martial arts.
You could throw me right out of this room in a second. It could happen. I was wondering, because I'm sure that you must have.
Oh, my God, it's terrible.
Really?
You get threat from the violence of the right and the left. When we helped Cleveland, we got threat from the left. When we helped Angela Davis, we got threat from the right. But human rights are out of vogue, and there's a lot of these idiots that don't seem to realize that we've got the power of a military-industrial complex overshadowing us. And we're going to have to forget some of these little differences of labels or whether we are Marxist-Leninist or a Darwinian socialist or whatever the hell.
About 3 or 4 years ago, we broke, you know, the movement split over that very thing. And they don't know when Marx and Lenin wrote, they wrote for another period, another time, a sort of another class struggle. But they just heard it and it became fashionable to say that we're there, sure to give labels.
Yeah.
Instead of just coming.
We can't do it.
I hope our machine.
Did it break?
No, it'll knock this new thing. We'll be good here for the machine.
I meant the kind of things you put over the air and break it. This was built for a different type of thing.
Welcome back to Reactions and our discussion. Incidentally, the People's Temple, because I know when this is over, you're going to want to know where it is. It's at the corner of Gary and Fillmore, and I'll give you that exact address in case you really want to see Reverend Jones in action. You're hearing him tonight. Reverend Jones, before I get back to that question about surveillance, despite the oath that doctors are popular, that doctors take, they are popularly thought to be, to place profit above philanthropy, and yet you have doctors and lawyers who are volunteering. How did you accomplish that?
Well, again, we can't generalize. I found some extremely sensitive people who are in the upper middle class in our church. As you mentioned, we have crossed that class barrier. We've overcome the racial barrier.
Age barrier.
Thank you for that. I see that the most beautiful thing, the youth and the seniors doing things together. And we respect our elders. That's one of the old proverbs that we hold dearly. And as a consequence, our seniors, I think we have the normal age of our seniors is in the 80s. We have one centenarian, she's 106, still going. And she fixes lemon pies in her little humble home.
Best pies I've ever eaten.
And sells them. The 106, you know. If we can just eliminate these barriers that have developed in our society between race and class. And I think People's Temple has gone a long way towards that. And as I say, you can't make generalizations. There are people in every class who are concerned about the deprivation and the poor distribution of our wealth that we see so obviously before us in the country.
Now, I know you must pose a threat to ministers here with established so-called churches that begin at what I have often defined the most segregated hour in this country is 11 o'clock Sunday mornings, where you find
very
people
true
in their own churches. So I know, what's the feeling with them? Have you made enemies? Are you coming together with them? Do they view you as a threat, a sort of siphoning off
Amazingly enough, we are finding a number of ministers, white ministers particularly. One ordained Baptist church in San Leandro has done a good minister there. Has done very good things for his people and works closely with us. We have, on Martin Luther King Day, the Council of Churches just voted that it be conducted in People's Temple. We had 91 ministers there. I'm not saying that they were all together, you know, in terms of perspective, but there is emerging in this community that kind of concern. Black ministers of the caliber of Reverend Hall, theologically, I don't know where he and I stand, but Reverend Hall has a great empathy for people in Bethel AME.
Famous, yeah.
And so it's happening more than I've seen it. And I think as we see economic conditions change, and they're going to change unless there's some miracles, we'll see more unemployment. Necessity is going to be the mother of invention. Folk are going to quit talking about heaven when they're hungry. And that's why I hope the church and all agencies begin to do voluntary things. We don't want to see a violent revolution in society. And so society is going to have to revolutionize itself from within, or it's going to be torn apart.
You've often said that in your ideology you are not violent by nature, but you're pacifist, and yet you tend to get things done. And usually any movement that really has gotten off the ground, whether in this country or in other countries, there has been a bit of bloodshed. But you feel that that isn't necessary.
I would hope it's not necessary. Now, when we took up the defense of the Jewish community not long ago, when the Nazis were emerging, not only against the Jews, they're against everybody, I guess, these bums, but they began to threaten, and I think they thought, well, we're pacifists. They've forgotten certain things that Gandhi said. Gandhi said if a mad dog's running loose, meaning a mad human within the society, endangering it, you don't allow that to happen. Now, pacifism doesn't mean that you roll over and play dead.
Mm-hmm.
Now, indeed, if a bunch of bums come into our temple, we're not going to turn the
other cheeks.
We've turned all the cheeks we've got anyway.
Okay.
And so we will resist evil. But what I'm saying, we don't believe in offensive violence like we're seeing happen.